One of the big criticisms of Reading Football Club this season has been that it's been, let's be honest, a little bit boring. What could you say about Saturday's game? Anything but. It was entertaining. We found out what it was like to leave the Mad Stad a little bit breathless, but very entertained, and really an almost satisfying game it turned out to be as well. 3-3 against Derby County on Saturday. Welcome to the Tyler Stem Podcast. I am Mark Mayer, your host, as always, and joining me for this edition of the show is Bucks Royal, aka Simeon Pickup, the editor of the website. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I've just seen Crystal Palace fluff their lines against Spurs on the TV. So we're recording this on Sunday, which is a bit different because I'm just kind of getting the instant post-match reaction in after the Derby game is kind of what we're going for this week. Probably next week we'll be back to the Monday and we'll continue on from there. But, you know, we've kind of got two games to talk about. So we'll go into the recap and talk about Forest as well as Derby.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So Sim, Forest then. I mean, this was, we'll talk about it quickly just to get it, kind of get out of the way. But this was such a very typical game for the season that we've had so far. Taking the lead, Omar Richards getting his first goal for the club, a lovely moment there, pretty much from exactly the same spot that Jordan Obita did as well a few years ago. Half-time, 1-0 up away at a team like Forest, you just think, you know, come on, let's just get through this. Let's backs against the wall, ugly victory, doesn't matter, keep a clean sheet, and then we upwards and onwards from there. However, it's not how it panned out, and our sort of game management was a bit worrying, wasn't it? Didn't know how to respond to the pressure in the second half, and ultimately came away with just the 1-1 draw.
Yeah, it reminded me of the Cardiff game quite a lot, to be honest. Pretty comfortable first half. We looked really good on the ball. We're getting it forward well, creating some chances in pretty much complete contrast to what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, particularly the turgid Millwall and Middlesbrough performances. But yeah, we looked really good in the first half against Forest. Very bright, a lot of movement, a lot of energy, a lot more confidence than we've seen in recent weeks. But then just completely going to pieces after the break. Forest pressed a lot more aggressively after half-time. A lot more kind of up-and-at-em approach, a lot more proactive, and our defence couldn't really deal with that pressure in the way that they'd have to be able to ride out the game. And that's something that Stam really needs to work on. He should have known that Forest were going to change their tactics, really try and get into our faces in the second half, but he didn't. And the players need to know how to respond to it. On the whole, looking through the game, is it a point gained or is it two dropped? Considering how bad things have been in the couple of weeks before that match, I'm going to have to say it's a point gained, but it's still obviously incredibly frustrating that we can't get that elusive win.
The thing is with the Reading team in general, and as we'll move on to Derby now and say how this was exactly the same. The great Reading teams of the past and the great Championship teams of the past, of course, as well, have had that nous. They've had that ability to sort of manage the game, to spot the moments of pressure, to spot the moments their opponents have dropped off as well. This team just doesn't have that at all. And at Derby, at home on Saturday, you know, the first half, we'll sort of discuss in more depth, but the key moment that related to the Forest game for me was how in the second half we came out and just, you know, there was just no effort levels for the first minute of the half. Tom Lawrence scores after 39 seconds to put Derby ahead after what was a decent first half performance, and it's that poor decision making. And after the goal as well, there was a spell of, you know, Mignone passing out to the back corner to, you know, knock it round and eventually lose it. These sort of, it's just game management, isn't it? It's just knowing when to take the sting out of games, knowing when to put yourself in between the opponent and the ball and just work out, get it away from your defensive territory. And that's something that we're still just not having, is it? And it's been under Stam for a while now.
Yeah, I don't know what the players what Stam expects from the players in those kind of situations, to be honest. He said after the game that he himself was quite frustrated with how Ilori and Mignone were just passing it between themselves under a lot of pressure, putting us into difficulties when we could have just hoofed it up the pitch and relieved pressure and moved up the pitch. But you've got to ask, are they doing that because it's what they're reverting to, what they're working on the training pitch so much that they feel that's their default style, that's what they should be doing? Are they doing it because there aren't enough options higher up the pitch, or what is it? Either way, it's something that Yapstan needs to really get on top of and teach them how to manage in the moment. Obviously, it's about the decisions that players make in the moment. Yapstan can't really affect it from the touchlines. It's about what Ilori decides to do when he gets the ball, what Malone decides to do when he's got a goal kick. But it's the kind of thing that Yapstan has to really drill into them. That's not so easy at the moment when you've got a goalkeeper who, despite being an experienced goalkeeper, isn't experienced with this style of football, and the centre-halves in front of him are not particularly experienced either. Ilori is still a young centre-half, as is Liam Moore. Omar Richards is obviously he's not even 20 yet. I don't know how old he is exactly, but he's not played an awful amount of senior football. Chris Gunter's an experienced guy as well, but one experienced defender in the entire back four is not enough. We really need Tommy Elphick and or Paul McShane back in this defence to give some leadership, give some proper experience and composure, because otherwise this is going to keep on happening, to be honest.
Yeah, well, Omar Richards turned 20 about 10 days ago, Google reliably informs me, so I'll forgive you for thinking that he was just below it, because he's just left his teens behind. But, I mean, you are right, it's the thing was that I found with the passing is, there was on one of the old Pro Evos, like in 2003 we're talking, when if you passed out to a defender from a goal kick and you passed it back to the goalkeeper to lump it, he then lumped it further than he would have done from just lumping it off the initial goal kick, which is kind of what I guess the guys were trying to do on Saturday, when it's Manoni to Ilori, back to Manoni and lumping it clear. It's just doesn't make any sense when you think about it. We'll get onto the good bits of Reading, but I just want to cover the final, or one of the other major things that I noticed in our sort of from the negative side of it from Saturday's game was the defensive errors. And I mean, I've tallied it up. We got Ilori and Gunter for the first goal, in my opinion. Ilori's like semi-overhead kick clearance. Gunter doesn't close down the man for the first goal. Second goal, Pella Clement gets completely in the way of Thiago Ilori's headed clearance, and then that rebounds it back into the area for, I mean, no one dealt with it after that. Everyone's to blame. Thiago Ilori for the third goal dives in, misses the tackle. Tom Lawrence scores. These defensive errors, you know, our defence has actually been relatively decent this season, considering that we've not had any 7 or 6 goals conceded. And yet now we're finally having a bit more impetus in attack. We're losing it in defence.
Yeah, and that decisiveness that we have in attack, or at least we had on Saturday, we've just lost it at the back. Sometimes you just need someone to just hoof the ball up the pitch. You need them to put it out for a throw-in, things like that. And if you look back at the goals, there are opportunities for our defenders to clear their lines and really just snuff out the danger. Going back to that first goal, Ilori can just hoof the ball up the pitch. Gunter can close his man down a little bit better. It's lots of little things. It's rarely one glaring, obvious error that is completely at fault for a goal. It's lots of little things where you could have done better. I think it's just a mindset for the defence.
These little things just build up as well, don't they?
Exactly. And they need someone experienced, someone decisive, who will just take charge in circumstances like that. Someone who's going to charge over and put in a crunching tackle and clear the ball, that they just know how to deal with that situation. And as I said earlier, Ilori doesn't have that. Moore doesn't have that as much as he did last season, I don't think. Richard still needs to learn it. So we need Elphick and or McShane back if we're to properly tighten up, I think.
Yeah, I think McShane certainly, in terms of crunching tackles, Chris Baird showed what Reading are missing in terms of the crunching tackles department with his 2-footed lunge on. I mean, did you think it was a red card? Because I thought at the time that it was liable for a second yellow. I don't know if Chris Baird is even on a yellow card, but I thought it was definitely a second yellow. The the hack that he's made is cynical, and it's off the ball, and it's sort of two-footed. So I don't think there's too much he can complain about from that being a red. Gary Rowett was unhappy with it, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's kind of in between a yellow and a red. It's one of those that one referee is going to say it's a yellow. Another one, if he's particularly harsh, is going to give it as a red. So I don't think you can complain either way, to be honest. The question is, why is Baird lunging in such a reckless, dangerous way against a Reading player? If it had been a young player in a big match quite early on in a big match, you could say, oh, it's nerves, it's something like that. But when it's someone's experience as Chris Baird, it's harder to kind of write it off as a silly challenge. It's reckless. So, yeah, it was a red for me.
Yeah, I think the worrying thing as well when it came to our ability to sort of make the most of being having Derby down to 10 men was that Mo Power just looked injured after it. He kind of limped around for a little bit. And we haven't heard anything about him potentially being unavailable for Tuesday at the moment, so fingers crossed that is but an impact sort of knock and that you can shake it off. And I mean, that was towards the end of the game. I thought the start of the game, aside from the Derby goal, the first half was completely bossed by Reading. There were prolonged periods of pressure. We were far more sort of up and at them. There was much more intent. Occasionally we'd have a attacking throw in have to be worked back to our goalkeeper, like we sort of used to do or still do, obviously. But generally speaking, this was a positive display by Reading. And I mean, Kelly's magic sort of bailed us out for the first goal. But even after that, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of intent about Reading that I don't think we've quite seen lately.
Yeah, I think that's down to the balance of the midfield for me. It felt a lot more, like there was a lot more movement, there was a lot more balance to it. Bakun is a lot more energetic in the middle than Joey Vandenberg has been, for example. And that kind of player physically setting the tone in the middle of the pitch, getting over and crunching into tackles, really driving the ball forward when he has the ball. It made the midfielder feel a lot more dynamic, really, than it has been in recent weeks. Kelly being able to drop back into space and pick passes from a deeper role. It seems to suit his playing style and his abilities a lot better than playing him higher up in the midfield as he has done recently. Clement didn't have a great game at all. He was below par, but I still feel that just having someone of that kind of midfielder in your midfield three who can get forward a little bit more, get into space and create options for other players makes the whole midfield team a lot more balanced, a lot more organic, a lot more suitable for the style of play than having people like Edwards and Vandenberg who were, for me, just too cumbersome.
Yeah, I think the thing is with Clement is that every pass was either severely overhit or quite underhit. And there were quite a few times when he asked a lot of the players that he was passing to. I mean, I really didn't like Clement's performance. I accept that he got into good positions, and I take your point about sort of being the more attacking midfielder, and I think John Swift in the long term will slot into that position nice and comfortably. But I mean, Pelle Clement, if I was to sum up in one sentence, is that he's just not good enough to play for Reading FC. Too lackadaisical on the ball, too sort of sloppy in his technique, and I do think that any other manager that wasn't Yapstam wouldn't have him in the team, and maybe we won't see him in the team from now on as we get into the sort of run-in for the season. He played his part in the second goal, though. Second goal is the type of goal we haven't really seen this season. It was a lot of pressing, a lot of pace in it. Mo Bauer just launched clear as soon as the opportunity presented itself, and a really calm finish as well.
Yeah, it's the exact kind of goal that Reading should be conceding rather than scoring, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just having that kind of that 50-50 ball that I think Clement had to go into challenge for, and Reading really having the intent, the purpose, the determination to win that 50-50 and take advantage of it. We haven't seen that this season. It's the sign of, I think, a more confident, more determined team. Maybe only a little bit, but enough to give you the edge in situations like that and to give a bit of space to Modu Barrow to really run at a pretty slow Derby defence. Gary Rowett must have been absolutely seething from that.
I think he was. Gary Rowett said after the game that he laid into his players as much as he ever has done at half time, and Derby did come out as a better team in the second half, there's no doubt about that. But I'm going to stick my neck on the line here for Mo Bauto and say that he's my early favourite for player of the season, because I really do think that in a season where we have been lacklustre for so much of it, to be that exciting attacking player who is, as I'm 99% sure, is our top scorer as well, and to be that man who has stood up and taken the initiative so much in an ailing attack, I think that is making him my standout player of the season so far.
Yeah, I think considering that he's a reliable attacking player, regardless of how well the rest of the team plays, he's not really a confidence player in the same way that he's only a threat when he's in the right mood. He's always a threat. He's always trying to get his pace and his determination. He always tries to put on the afterburners and really run at a defence, stretch a defence, whether that's a good performance or a bad performance. He's often been the best player in a bad performance. You look at the Millwall game, for example, he was pretty much the only attacking threat that Reading had. And I actually looked back at the stats for that game yesterday, and he had something like 18 dribbles, which was an insane amount, particularly for a team that's playing so poorly. He just seems to be immune to the negativity a lot of the time. He's got so much pace, and he just loves to use it.
Yeah, I think one player who sadly we are going to have to touch on, because he just continues. In open play, I don't worry so much about him, but his set pieces, Sonny Aluko's set pieces against Derby, it was incredible how accurately under-hit they were. I watched him, there was one time right in front of me at the North East where he put the ball in and it was cleared by Cameron Jerome at the near post and it came straight back to him. He put the ball in again and it was cleared by Cameron Jerome at the near post. This was just a continual theme for Sonny Aluko. And the thing is with Aluko, I don't mind if he's, you know, not the best finisher, if he's not the quickest, maybe, if he's not going to defend particularly well. These are all sort of secondary attributes, I think, for a lot of the time for wingers. As we've seen for Barrow, he makes good of his pace and he uses that. Aluko, I mean, describe to me what Aluko's good at, because at the moment, his technique is shoddy. He's not getting forward enough to be a threat in the box. He doesn't particularly work hard. And, I mean, his passing is fine, but that's the thing. A lot of the stuff he does is fine, but none of the stuff he does is excellent.
Yeah, I can't pick out any particularly good attribute about him, to be honest. I wonder if that's because does Stan know how to use him properly? Is Stan giving him kind of mixed messages about what he wants from him? I've noticed that a lot of the time he seems to get frustrated being a winger kind of high up and out wide, and he'll drift back a lot to try and get the ball. I don't know if he's getting frustrated that he's not getting the ball enough and he's having to go looking for it, particularly when you don't have John Swift in that attacking role to kind of link the play. Modu Barrow, in contrast, is a confident player who always knows what he wants to do. He always knows how he's going to try and hurt a defence. Aluko never seems to have an idea. Whether it's kind of going on the outside of a defender or cutting inside, he's never decisive. He never seems to think, this is how I'm going to hurt a defence, this is what I'm going to do, try and cope with it. It's just, yeah, you wonder how Stam's going to try and get around it, but for the moment, for the short term, I think we've got to see Gareth McCleary back in a starting 11, who's not been great himself in the last couple of weeks, but he's going to be looking at Aluko's performance and think, how am I not going to get in this first team now?
Well, at least with McCleary, you know what you're going to get. It's the very straightforward case. So put him on the right flank, he'll combine with Gunter, he'll put some balls into the box, he may have the odd shot. Those may not be the best crosses or shots in the world, but you know that's his game and that's what he'll do. We'll talk about Yap Stam to round off the recap, because, I mean, I have a bit of sympathy for Yap Stam at this particular moment in time. I've not had it for a while, but when he came out and spoke to the press after the Derby game, he actually said the right things for the first time in ages. I mean, I'll reel off some of his quotes now. He said, "For some reason, the silly goals are still happening. It's too easy to give away like that. You work yourself very hard. You could say that you play better than the opposition. But if they score goals and we don't, then you lose. That's frustrating and something that we need to handle. We've been talking about that all season and working on that." He also said that he thought the fans were very good, helping the team out at times when it was difficult. And he also said that sometimes you just need to clear the ball when you're defending. Those are all agreeable statements. I mean, what's gone on?
I think he's just so confused by having a positive result at home to chew over. Particularly the comment about the fans, I think he's spot on. And it's good that we finally got a game to kind of unite behind. We've got a good performance that Yap Stam can hopefully take positives from, the fans can certainly take positives from, rather than Stam having to take shots at the fans as he has done in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, and also his comments about just clearing the ball when you're defending. I get the feeling that he's frustrated as much as we are, that Ilori and Manone were just passing the ball between themselves. And hopefully it's something that he's really going to work on before Tuesday, when we've got Sheffield United at home, because that's going to be a really tough game. And if we start passing the ball around like that, and Chris Wilder works out that you just need to press Ilori and Manone, then we're going to be in for a very long evening, particularly up at Wolves again the following Saturday.
We've always said about Stam that his stubbornness has often been his downfall, and I think the way that he asks players to play, we could often talk about how it's kind of above the quality of players that we have. And if now is finally the time that he's realising that, and he's begun to realise it over the past few weeks, and now that he's sort of attuning his style and making sure that there's less sort of aimless passing around at the back, and making sure that there's something to give the fans reason to get up out of their seats, and he provides those things more and more. I mean, that is exactly what we've always been wanting. It's exactly what we've been talking about on this show for months now. And if, you know, you can say if he's finally realised it now, it's too late for some people. Quite frankly, I don't think it can be too late when you're not in the relegation zone. Obviously, you're not in the playoffs, but, you know, c'est la vie. So, such is Championship football a lot of the time. And if this is the step in the right direction that we need, and hopefully it is, then, you know, we'll have to keep on keeping on and seeing what Stam does on Tuesday night. We will move on now to news bites, and after that we'll have the mailbag, and of course we'll preview the upcoming games next week.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Bit of transfer news to kick off News Bites then, and as that Gabriel Osho has moved on loan to Maidenhead United of National League fame just down the road. Nice little trip for him. And he was on the bench as they drew 0-0 at Macclesfield, who are the league leaders, on the weekend. Sim, is Osho someone that you've noticed before in the youth teams? Is it's a good loan move, in my opinion, to go to a team that is performing well and that certainly has a good structure and a lot of positive management around the club at the moment.
Yeah, I believe he's been the captain for the under-23s this season and maybe the year before that. So he's certainly been one of the more senior defenders in the youth side over the last couple of years, and been doing very well there, by all accounts. Very, very strong, composed centre-half, the kind of player that hopefully we can see in the first team over the next couple of years. And that first loan move is really important in anyone's development, really. Getting that senior football, that proper taste of competitive man's football, for grown man's football, for want of a better term. And it's good to see him getting it at Maidenhead, a club where a lot of Reading fans have an emotional connection to. So it'll be good to hopefully see him get some games under his belt there, maybe go out on loan again next season if he's impressed there. Yeah, and I wish him well in his development.
Yeah, the thing is with Osho and the sort of centre-backs and the academy sense is that if Reading are going to try and play this passing style that we've known the club and the academy have been focused on it for some time now, if they're going to produce players of that style, then I think the centre-backs is almost one of the most important positions in that, because it's where the attacks start a lot of the time. And when you have players we've seen sort of Paul McShane and to extend Thiago Loy, if they're not comfortable on the ball, that's so hard to teach a centre-back. Whereas if they have it from an early age and they can, you know, they're produced with that style, then maybe, just maybe, that's the way to make it work, is to have them all come out of the academy and to all be familiar with themselves. And we'll keep an eye on Osho on the TarlesDen.com. Of course, we'll have the loan report up regularly, so you can see how he's getting on. In terms of injury news at the moment, John Swift came back off the bench against Derby for a little 20-minute cameo. He looks to be back in, and hopefully he will start against Sheffield United on Tuesday. One player who was missing from the squad was Jan Kermigan. Yapstam said after the game that it will be a couple more weeks before Kermigan is back in the team, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Interesting news for the under-18s. Last couple of weeks since we last covered them, they've lost 6-2 to Arsenal and 4-0 to Spurs, so they're 11th in the Premier League table at the moment. They play Norwich, who are 12th and bottom next Saturday, so an interesting one to keep an eye out for that in terms of how the under-18s are doing. They have progressed in the Youth Cup, but they've also been knocked out because they fielded a 15-year-old, I believe, in the Colchester game, who was 14 in August. And if you're under 15 in August or by August 31st, you are not allowed to play in the under-18 Youth Cup. We'll talk about this rule in a second, Sim, as to whether you think it's the right rule or not. But I can tell you now that the idea behind the rule is to make sure that Man United don't play a bunch of 12-year-olds in their first round and have them breeze past Yeovil's under-18s, because that would be a bit unfair. But they're out of the Youth Cup.
Yeah, and it's a farcical rule for me. Stopping an entire team from progressing in the cup because of one, I think it was one player being a couple of months out or something like that. If it's the letter of the law, I can understand it, but just give them an opportunity to replay the game or something like that. Fine them, something like that. But blunting the progress of an entire team because of one small administrative error isn't the way to encourage youth development in this country. It's utterly farcical. And to be honest, it's not the kind of thing that's going to get revisited in the next couple of years, is it? Because it's happened to little old Reading. It's not going to have people up in arms all over the country. It's just going to get swept under the carpet. I think barely anyone's noticed, to be honest, that this kind of thing has happened. And nothing's going to change, but it's just, it's farcical red tape.
I think the rule is fine, but the punishment, I mean, I think Southend did the same thing a few seasons ago, and they just had a replay. So I don't know why we haven't had that. I don't believe that the full reasoning and everything has really been made online. I think Reading still have the time to appeal, but this has all been, I mean, no one, it's very hard to find these things out unless the club say it. So we'll keep an eye on that and update you as and when we find out. Other bits of news, the women beat Bristol 4-0 and are now sixth in the Women's Super League. So good result for them. They play Chelsea next. Under 23s beat Middlesbrough last Sunday 3-2. They're now fourth in the Premier League 2 table, but the teams around them all have a game in hand, so in the promotion battle for that, it really is one that Reading are in amongst it, but they're not sort of taking the lead and not favourites just yet, although Borough are another team that around them that they beat. And finally, there is some Championship news in general. The summer transfer window deadline has been brought forward to August the 9th. So no more transfer deadline day at the end of August. August the 9th, this is going to be, which is going to be the same in the Premier League. I'm not sure when this comes into effect, Sim. There's also another rule that's been put in about understrength teams, but I don't think Reading have ever really found that coming into them. But transfer window deadline brought forward, good move in your eyes. Will this help Reading in particular?
Ultimately, only time can tell, but my initial impressions are that it's gonna damage Reading, it's going to damage other teams, because at the moment you have quite a long transfer window, and because of that, the window changes, it adapts over the course of a couple of months, and teams can adapt to changing circumstances. If they lose a player quite early on, they've got plenty of time to replace them, things like that, and it's quite a dynamic market. If something happens, they can adapt to it. But having a shorter market, particularly one that closes before the season starts, just makes it harder to adapt. I know they've kept the loan rule, the loan window open until the end of August, which is a good move. But on the whole, I'm I'm pretty sceptical about it.
Yeah, I think for me, I quite like it because I'm not a massive fan of the deadline day whole shebang, whatever you want to call it. It's not something that that I really enjoy, and I think it's kind of more for the media more than for the fans. It's kind of like Valentine's Day. If you really want to get involved in it and spend loads of time and money on effort for it, good for you, but it's not something that I think should be thrust in my face. Let's put it that way. So we'll see how it affects the market. A bit more free planning I don't think would be a bad thing. But yeah, this is something that will obviously become a fact of life and we'll have to deal with it. But I mean, we've obviously run blogs on the Silas then. When was the last time that Reading have really had a deadline day that we've sat back from and thought, oh yeah, that was a great deadline day, really happy with that?
Maybe last January, I guess, with Graben and Oxford, I think, both came in on the same day.
And we seen Reading. Was Much as well on deadline day?
Much was a couple of weeks earlier, I think.
Ah, okay.
Or a little while earlier. Obviously, Oxford and Graben didn't do particularly well in the long term, but it felt like a really good day at the time. And we won at Birmingham on the same day. Not transfer news, but I guess it kind of counts. Bit of a loophole there. Going back before that, probably Glenn Murray coming in very late on a summer deadline day. But on the whole, we tend to kind of run out of money and we run out of money and ideas by the end of the summer, and we're kind of left twiddling our thumbs, perhaps in bushes if you're Jacob Southcline, not really doing anything on August the 31st.
Well, I guess the good thing for him is that August the 9th, it should be warmer than August 31st.
Yeah.
It's more towards the summer. So I know the January one, he was freezing his nuts off to very little acclaim in the end, bless him. So hopefully that'll help him in a something of a regard. Loan signings, we should add. Loan signings and free transfers can still be done up until August 31st, the traditional deadline day. So, as I say, it's something that we'll have to keep an eye on for the Championship. It's always a unique market the Championship has to deal with. And we'll keep an eye on that for you. Next up, we will go into your questions from the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Sim, we've got a couple questions this week. Nothing too major, but we'll get on with them straight away. And George Blair has asked us, what really impressed you with the performance against Derby? I want to, let's sort of narrow this down. I want your two most impressive factors from the Derby game. Obviously, we've discussed it, but just to get your two most impressive ones in there.
Ooh, I'm going to start off with belief. Reading being able to get back into the game a couple of times, having been losing, particularly that first goal after about 5 minutes, to fight back through Liam Kelly and then to fight back through Von Varson later on in the second half. We haven't seen that very much this season. And I feel that a lot of the time we've started well, like we did against Derby, but then just completely collapsed after the first goal. So to see that not happen against Derby, to see us really have that belief to be able to get back into the game in the manner that we did, I thought was really encouraging. As for my other one, I'm going to say the system, actually. I think the system clicked in a way that it hasn't before. Being able to score three goals whilst having, was it 72% possession? Usually, if we have about 72% possession, we won't score at all and we'll lose 3-0 or 4-0 or something like that. So to be able to get the system to click at home in front of fans who haven't exactly been too receptive of it in the last couple of months, I thought was very encouraging.
For mine, I think I'm not going to go with the fans because the fans are always something that I've been underappreciated by Stan, but I will go with Stan's comments. Actually, Stan did really impress me with what he said after the game. He didn't shirk under a sort of false pretense of being hard done by. He stood up to the fact that we conceded silly goals, and he also made the right noises when it came to the fans and the style. And I think the attacking belief, the belief that Mo Barrow thinks that he can out-muscle a player to go in and set up the third goal, the belief that Liam Kelly has that he can take a pot shot from 30 yards and hit the top corner, and he almost did it in the second half. So attacking belief is my second point on that, as well as Stam's reaction to it. And Johnny Williams, aka Angry Johnny, one of the regular contributors on Tarlhurst End, has said, are the expensive players living up to their price tags? Is this, we've sort of touched on Sonny Aluko a bit, the other expensive players in the team, it's kind of linked with the worst players in a way, isn't it? Thiago Alori is the second most expensive player in that team, who didn't have a particularly great game on Saturday. Vito Manone is another one who cost us a little bit of money, but I think he's generally been fine, if not a little bit average. Bakuna and Mo Barrow were both over a million, so was Gunter. Are those the players that have been least or most impressive for you?
I guess the price tag gives players a lot to live up to, and although he may deny it, Aluko has probably thought a lot of the time about how much he cost, about how much pressure there is at this club, because he came for so much money. Having done very well with Fulham, he's now been headhunted by another club for a lot of money, and he's expected to play really well. And if he doesn't have a good game, it's always, oh, he cost £7.5 million. What a ridiculous player. How bad is he? Because of that £7.5 million price tag, which I don't think is true, to be honest. I think it's fairly obvious that it's not a... He didn't actually cost £7.5 million. That was debunked by, I think, Stam and Tevreden a couple of weeks later. But it sticks around. It's certainly in the mind of some fans who want to criticise him. It's probably in his mind as well. So it can be a... It's a bit of an albatross around his neck, as it were. Looking at our players who have played better, people like Barrow, Moore, Richards obviously came through the academy, but the ones that we've brought in and have done well, having been at other clubs, we haven't really paid too much money for them. There's less pressure on people like Moore and Barrow to succeed at this club because we've kind of headhunted them from bigger clubs, or at least clubs in a better situation, and just let them go out there and enjoy their football without the pressure of a big price tag. And that pays off in their performances.
Yeah, I think the thing is, when it comes to price tag, I'm not, you know, my opinion of Sonny Aluko is more influenced by how well he was doing before he came to the club. If you compare it to like Bodvarsson and Barrow, Liam Moore to an extent, Bakuna, all these players weren't doing well at their clubs when we signed them. So therefore, any upturn is by definition an upturn, and that's positive. Whereas Aluko was doing so well at Fulham. He was, you know, he was one of our major rivals last season as we were in the playoffs, and he was one of their best players that they really didn't want to lose. And yet he's been, you know, all the rest of it. I think that's probably my larger takeaway from the price tag debate. Anyone who wants to get involved in the mailbag for next week's show, of course, get involved on the Twitter and Facebook pages of the Tarlhurst End. You can also email us at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. We do often get questions in there. We always make sure we bring them into the show. So please, if you have any thoughts on the championship changes, or even on the sort of things that we've mentioned or haven't mentioned in the show, then please do let us know, because we'll be moving on now to any other business, because we have two games against even more promotion contenders to look forward to.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
A home doubleheader, then. It's the sort of home doubleheader where you think 4 points might be acceptable, and that detail, or that demands that we beat Sheffield United at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, Sim. Sheffield United have been hugely inconsistent in the past few weeks. I think we were quite unlucky, actually, because when we played them earlier in the season, we got beat 2-1, but that was Sheffield United's absolute peak, wasn't it? That was their best part of the season.
Yeah, I seem to remember us getting played off the park up there. I didn't go up there myself, but apparently they had a lot of shots. They really could have run out 4-5-0, that kind of scoreline. And I don't know how we managed to score once, so let alone keep it down to 2-1. But since then, they've obviously not been as consistent. They've slipped down a lot. And I think, in a sense, this is the kind of team that you want to be playing at home, because when you have teams like Burton, Millwall, Birmingham, they don't really have anything to lose when they come to the Medeski. And they're very up for it, and they present a very different challenge. But then when you've got a team like Derby or Sheffield United who have been doing really well but then are inconsistent, that lack of belief, I think, makes them almost more beatable in a sense. That they are, yes, they're very good players and they're a very good team, but at the end of the day, if you don't play well, then you're a beatable team. And I think we've shown a couple of times this season, particularly with Wolves at home and Derby at home yesterday as well, that we can match these teams at home. And I expect to see that on Tuesday as well, backing us for a win.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to back us for a win, purely because I think that'll jinx it in a way. But I will say that Sheffield United, in the league, over their last 8 away games, they've only won once. Our record against Sheffield United is something interesting. Can you tell me the last time that in the Championship we beat Sheffield United at home?
I'm going to guess 2005.
Yep, it was Brynjar Gunnarsson with the double. 2005-2006 season was the last time we beat Sheffield United at home in the Championship. We've since beat them in the Premier League, the League Cup, the FA Cup and away in the Championship, but at home in the Championship not so much. And in the last 6 games in the league against Sheffield United, we've drawn 1, lost 5. So, a bit of a bogey team, I suppose. But obviously, from having in that sort of 2005-06 period, them being our main rivals, we haven't really played them so consistently since. So, this is going to be an interesting game. It's kind of a hard one to predict. I'm going to go 1-1 with my prediction, if you would be so kind as to detail me yours.
I'm going to go 2-1 Reading.
Yeah, I think this has the potential to have goals in it, and I wouldn't be surprised if we can get a couple ourselves. Then we go to Wolves on Saturday, 5:30 kickoff, because the Sky cameras have come to watch us beat Wolves, obviously, as one would expect. The record watch, 106 record, how are Wolves doing in terms of that? Well, I can tell you that if we beat Wolves, the best they can do is tie the 106. They've drawn 2 and lost 1 of their last 3 games. I mean, it's the same question for Sheffield United, I suppose, but this is the good time to play them, isn't it? I'm sure this is the right time to play them.
Yeah, absolutely. We are just that little bit more confident after 2 score draws in the last 2 games, so we've got that bit of belief back. Wolves have been wobbling a tiny bit, and they were apparently beaten very, very comfortably by Fulham last night, who did a good job on them. And despite all of that, we're going to go there with pretty much no pressure on us. No one's expecting us to win. No one's expecting us to probably even get a draw, to be honest. And with that lack of pressure, I think we could thrive under it.
I think this Wolves game has so much of a sense of like when we went to Derby away in the year that we were awful and they got to the playoffs. Or no, they had to beat us on the last day of the season to get into the playoffs, and we beat them 3-0. It just has that sense of the game for me. It's just one of those where we could go and upset the apple cart. And the fact it's in front of the TV cameras just means that there's that added pressure on Wolves, because there's no pressure on us whatsoever going into this game, unless we lose 6-0 in the week and it looks like we're heading for relegation again. But if we get a good result in the week and we continue it, I genuinely think that if we're ever going to beat the top team in the league, this is going to be the moment to do it. So, Tuesday, obviously, we'll have to get past that first. I'm not going to make any predictions for Saturday until that has gone in. In terms of the prediction league, everybody got wrong for Derby. 2 people said win, 4 people said lose, and it was a draw. So Tom Crockett is still ahead on 22 points. Westie in second on 17 points because he said 1-1 for Forest. So we will keep an eye on that for the prediction league. And, well, Sim, I mean, we're just... Thank you for coming on for the show today. But we are just more optimistic now. There's just more entertainment, and it's just finally the thing that we wanted to see as you turn up on a Saturday 3 p.m. Yes, we haven't won on a Saturday 3 p.m. since the year 42 AD, but it was just more entertaining, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually felt good coming out of a Reading game for once. There was a real there was a buzz in the stadium coming out of the game. I felt happy. The birds were singing, the sun was shining, everything was wonderful because Reading had actually played an entertaining game of football for once.
Well, absolutely. So Tuesday night is, get down to the Mad Stad. It will be cold, but hopefully it will be once again entertaining. That is it then for episode 154 of the Tyler Stem Podcast. Thank you for joining us. get down on Tuesday, check out the game on Saturday. If anyone's going to Wolves, even though it's on TV, kudos to you. And thanks for everyone listening again this week. And see you next time. Come on, you Ars.
Just starting to